Podcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Something's wrong.
Your screen is showing. Your voice is being heard.
Okay, that's good. And Joe, when you're on like that, right now, I can actually hear myself talk. There was such a loud
buzz. There's an echo. Okay.
So do stay on. No, it was a obliterating buzz. So just stay on like you are right now. You're good. And Tuya has her link. And I just want to say hi to everybody. And good evening. Thank you for coming. I'm sorry that I was not with us, or with me, or with you, or with it. sometimes. During the last week, I've got some buildup to do before the conference, and I'm working on it. And whenever I can give the webinars before I have to sort of close them off for conference activity, we will let you know. So apparently all's well that ends well. We're good for the moment, and you can see everything good. And it's nice to see you here. I want to welcome you, Anne and Annette and Brennan and Catherine and Diana and Frederick and Heike and Judy and Karen. Lori, hi. And Lorraine, Risto, Tervetulo, best I can do. Roz and Stephen, hi, and Tia, and Anne, Veronica, Christus. Welcome to all of you, and there'll be more joining, you know, so I can only do that one time. And over here, helping us, Joe and Michael. Very grateful for your guidance, as when I start pantomime shows, you know, without the microphone going. But we seem to be okay at the moment. I want to know, before starting, and by the way, I don't intend that this shall be a super long meeting. There are meetings in the morning because we're on the broadcasting schedule, which is the morning schedule. So that's the Triangles work, which will be coming on in the morning, broadcasted at 6 a.m. GMT. And lots of appointments tomorrow and all kinds of things. So, I sometimes feel that I could go on and we could go on forever with this subject. However, I will work against my tendencies and instead cut it a little short. And hi, Vera, I see your name there, and welcome. And if I somehow do not welcome you, it's only because of the timing and because I probably have overlooked something. But anyway, glad you're here, okay? Now, so our first Are there questions about what we are doing? Are there questions? You know, I've been a little under the weather for a week or so. And, you know, sometimes when you're in the middle of, let's say, difficult situations, you may not think in these terms, but then a moment of subsiding comes, and sometimes it's even easier after certain difficult events to think in the terms that we are trying to instill within our normal perception as intuception. I found that. I said, suddenly, wait a second, well, how can I put it? The air is very thick with beingness. You know, I'm not speaking with any kind of accuracy here. I'm just giving a kind of image that the beingness of things stands out. Sometimes after it's been difficult to apply it. So before we begin our little reflections on things, are there any general questions about the subject? I guess we've been doing some of this definition since quite a while already. But it's very important. Now, in a way, you know, it's hard to define the terms that we use. What is important is to feel the substance. Feel the substance. And if I can say even more about that, feel substantial. It's very, very important to feel substantial, because then you will begin to develop what the Tibetan calls true understanding. Standing under, feeling substantial. In other words, everything you see right now, you hear, you know, all the senses, they could all go away. And your own substantiality would persist. So, you know I'm using words that look like they came out of a third ray version of the underworld. But I'm trying to find ways here to get into the intuception, the feeling of being the most real thing that exists. So, you know, I have to say, and it'll sound strange, that you, I, and whatever perception we focus on is essentially the most real thing in cosmos and even beyond. If I go up to somebody and say, well, don't you know you are God? You know, at first they think I'm crazy, then I'm blasphemous, then all the rest of it comes in. But we have to get in touch, not with what we look like in the mirror, but what our essentiality is. What our substantiality is. until we discover that there just isn't any other being essentially considered. All this, we talked about boundaries, I think. And you know, you just can't have a boundary and have the absolute. The absolute, which you are and everything essentially is without boundaries. And it doesn't mean that it just goes on and on and on and on. The implications of being without boundaries means that time is eliminated and space is eliminated. In other words, to be boundaryless in the ultimate sense is not to have extension. Extension is the perception that things are laid out in space, you know, and they one thing touching another and bounded by itself and touching the boundary of something else, and it all seems to be spread out. But in absolute reality, which we are, and of course, look, I don't really expect us to get this in one life or however many. It's a big perception, but in absolute reality, there just isn't any extension, whether of time or space. And what that means, oh boy, what that means. Let me just say, it means that in a way, everything Judy, you asked a question about the vibratory force and that each of us carry. I mean something. I mean that's very important what you're bringing up, but I mean something beyond that. I just mean, and let's we don't know where we would go with this, but what I want to say is that all universes, and there is forever an infinitude of them, both past in a way, actual and future, are essentially superimposed. They're really the same thing. And they're superimposed upon each other. And in something that may mean a little more to us, although I personally always find time harder to deal with than space. Okay, but in this particular case, I will say that all apparent times are really superimposed upon each other, and all times are the same time, and thus you have something we call the eternal now. It's always now, and there's no way to move in reality out of now. This business about, oh, that was then, this is now, and that will be, is all part of Maya. And when you have the boundless immutable principle, which is the great being, or be-ness, as H.B. Blavatsky likes to call it, then the phenomenon, well, or noumenon, or state of superimposition has to be dealt with. No movement, no change, no extension, and finally, the absolutely ultimate state, which is possible, that we are always in, and which I find impossible to describe, except that it takes into itself all the other possible states. Some people like to call it bliss, you know, whatever. It has nothing to do with vibration. There is no vibration, because vibration requires change. And this is immutable, no change. Now, you know, look, what we're doing here, we're building the Antikarama. The Tibetan has given us a method, and of course we follow it, because it is somehow very much on the first rate line, and follow his instructions, and we will get there. He's also taught us the method of reaching the golden harmony and beauty of the soul. You know, we use the master in the heart and the various visualizations. But what we're trying to do here is a little different. We're trying to think our way into what is perceived, at least partially, within the spiritual triad, and beyond, and beyond, and beyond, for which we, as tiny extensions, what do I call us? Extensions. I call ourselves, in the world of Maya, we are extensions of the One, and we are the One. We as tiny extensions are not going to receive all that high stuff immediately. But we're going to know that we live in a world of Maya. Maya is illusion. But the great Shankara, you know, he respected Maya and said, as I have said to you, most mysterious is Maya, and forever. So, and that foreverness, of course, my wife tells me I'm talking a little too loud. Okay. I get excited about the subject, you know. But she's right to want to spare your ears. Every time you have a universe, you have Maya. And every time everything dissolves into no thingness, the Maya disappears. It's cyclic. And I must say that the no thingness mysteriously never disappears. So I would just say, it's an amazing life. It's based on perceptions that we can only begin to have. And it's and to understand it, or to be it and be with it, we need to attack, well, it's not a good word, be with this concept of being. Now, for instance, if I was to ask you, just look around your room and focus on something, anything. I'll use the sense of sight because I think it takes in the most data, if I can call it that way. Okay. Just look around your room. I'll focus on something, you focus on something. And identify its qualities, maybe its colors, or if it makes a sound, or its shape, any of that kind of thing. Just do that. And you see, when you do that, you are entering the realm of a quality. Quality. You can I'm dialoguing here with Tuya at the same time. You're entering the realm of quality. You can compare one thing and another. If I was looking, you know, just at my computer, I would say it's black. I can, it's thin relatively to other computers. I can compare it with other computers. I can compare it with a new telephone, an old telephone, any number of things that I can, the different methods of communication, you know. I can compare it with a bullhorn or some way that people used to be able to connect with each other. But it's comparable. Now please try to get that into your mind, that in the world of relativity, or maybe I should call it relativity, one thing relates to another, yeah? In the world of relativity or relativity, you can compare things. You know, like the old game, 20 questions. Is it animal, vegetable, or mineral? Or maybe we could enhance 20 questions now, and with our esoteric knowledge, and we could add intangible, spiritual, whatever. But it's something. It has a quality. But this thing you're looking at, what if it had only being? What if the only thing about it was that it is? Now you see the world you just entered. It's not, you know, my little mantra here. It's not what a thing is. It's that it is at all. That that thing is at all. That's the next world. That's our world of being. He says, he's a very rich man. Oh, he's a man. He's a member of the government. Oh, he's this, he's that. No, that's in the realm of quality. That object that we are focusing on simply is. And in the isness of things, maybe you should write this down, in the isness of things, is there identicality? And you know what that basically is meaning. No matter how different I appear from you, you from me, we from the master, whatever relativity is found in the absolute infinity is in a sense less real than incomparable absoluteness. Thank you, Joe. So, you know, usually that's not how we're going to be thinking. We are victims of the great heresy of separateness. I'm a Federalist, you're a Whig. I'm a Democrat, you're a Republican. Whatever, you know, difference everywhere. And the search for sameness related to the identicalizing isness. Now there's another one of those couple of words. It might be useful. Identicalizing isness. I don't care what it is you perceive, it's the same as you in being. Now, nobody's saying that we don't have to learn all about the quality. We do, because that's the only way to handle Maya and to make the universe a success in terms of its design, you know? But meanwhile, 5 minutes a day, you can give yourself to this semi-crazy notion that isness makes everything identical. And I just turn around and call it the identicalizing isness. But here's the thing, you have to sit with it. Now, you looked at something and you identified its qualities or its parts, or its distinct constituent parts. My computer has a lot of those. Or I could look at the ceiling. I could look at lamps, at pictures, whatever it is I'm going to find that this is different from that. But if I focus on the object, take this as a little meditation. Can I let my heart touch being so that there is some level of perception? I call it infuception, where what I'm looking at starts to be. Yeah, you identify as what you see. But it's not just a mental thing. If it was just a mental thing, okay, good. But it's got to have the heart. Or whatever chakric organ works for you. It's not going to be the solar plexus. It's not going to be the sacral center. It's not even going to be some of the higher centers. You have to, in a way, wait for the isness to come on. It's there all the time, and you have to wait a little bit, maybe less later, for the isness to reveal itself. Now, the road to that revelation, I kind of suspect it's going to be different for everybody. And it is a contemplative act, and it is related, I would say, to a high state of samadhi. You know how the members of the first sub-race are. In our fifth root race, they really are analytical. And if you have samadhi, they'll give you 20 varieties of it, you know. But the idea is the same. You start looking for the isness of things. That isness has no boundaries, because if you can perceive it, it's identical to everything else. Now that is like almost seems anti-educational. I just said, if you can perceive it, it's identical to everything else that you can perceive. I like to say, you know, kind of crazy way here, that self-perception is, forgive me for this one, self-perception is thingification. In other words, things don't, how can I say that? Things do not come into objectivity, thingness, unless the act of self-perception is there. Now, obviously, we're little human beings, and not everything seems to be contained within us. But as we drop one boundary after another, one ring past knot after another, we're going to learn that in terms of the universal, everything is contained within us. As a matter of fact, we are contained within ourselves. In other words, the eye that's talking to you right now is just an extreme partiality of what I am, what you are. And I will learn that I recognize my other self, no matter what that self may be. I see my other self. The other self is the lesser self, and the I, finally, is the great universal I. Thank you. So Joe's giving us those little flashes, or someone is here, of what I'm saying, if it's worth it. And it'll be in the chat box. So you can copy out of that if you like. So this little group of sessions that we are having is to help us make the transition from quality to being. And there's a huge difference in a way. And I'm thinking if I can re-quote it, the Shelley statement. Let's see, this Shelley. A life like a dome of many splendored glass, many colored glass, stains the white radiance of eternity. So maybe someone can put that quote in from Shelley. Because you get the idea. There's the white radiance. Ah, that's it. Good, thank you. There's the white radiance of eternity. And then there's all of the qualities that, as we know as esotericists, periodically appear. So you live and move and have your being within the world of being, which is, in a way, everything. We don't care, in one way, what comes out of that being. I mean, we know we have to deal with it, and deal with it rightly. But we know it is Maya, and simply a reflected content of the absolute infinity. You know, this is the way of looking at things. If you really sit down with yourself sometime, you know, and say, hey, what's going on? I mean, what's happening? Or not happening? You may be led to your own series of thoughts about what's happening or not happening, and you may find your way of making sense out of the world. And by the world, I mean all the various perceptions you have on all the different levels, and you'll discover they are, eventually, you'll discover they are self-perceptions. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for putting that in. Heaven's light forever shines. Earth's shadows fly. Life, like a dome of many colored glass, stains the white radiance of eternity until death tramples its fragments. Please, someone send this to me. That's beautiful. Admittedly, friends, we are looking at things now in the philosophical sense. Philosophy, it's the love of wisdom. Do we love wisdom? And what DK gives us, a lot of philosophy, but also a lot of factuality, we might say, almost like a science. This is how things are. And yet we are speculating beyond what we can immediately know. But to speculate in a reasonable manner gives you a good chance of reaching this. That's the monastic permanent atom, basically, which is the vital center of the abstract mind. There's not so many people yet that are at home with the abstract mind. It's just a bunch of concreteness floating around, and it's necessary because it's a building block, you know. But we are students of the esoteric, and we are expected to reach into abstract and subliminal places where more real things are happening, ever more real, and our quest is to deal with the ever more real until we reach, as we inevitably will forever, the ultimately real. And what is that ultimately real? Well, it certainly is you and I, but we call it absoluteness or the absolute. Now, even a little bit of time a day, even a little bit, can produce good results and give us a broader understanding, deeper, more identificatory, you know. The Christ, it is said of him, he knew what was in man. No barriers for him. He walks up to you and he knows your history. That the woman at the well in Samaria, he told her of her history and her past, what was it? Five husbands or something? I'm not sure. Something, he just knew what was in man. And we are heading in that direction too. We'll be patient because already, and this is the killer, you know, forever has forever elapsed. And yet it hasn't. There's no point in time. There's no point in time when forever has not elapsed. And yet, it hasn't. Because there's a foreverness ahead, as there's always a foreverness behind, those being merely concepts, just concepts, to orient ourselves in time and space. And then we come to the cruncher that given the boundlessness and the imparticulate nature of absoluteness, no time has ever elapsed. So those are things we have to think about. But practice being what you're seeing. Practice being what you're seeing, being what you're hearing, being what you're tasting, touching, and smelling. Practice being what you think is so very different from you. And I think the result will be some states of consciousness which are not habitual by any means. Well, look, I said I'd keep it short, you know. Okay, we're getting good advice here. A little blue screen, you know, is always flashing in front of me and maybe in front of you. And when we finish, make sure to cut and paste your chat box. Unless, Joe, you think there's a better way.
No, I think the best way is to go into the chat box and cut and paste the link that I gave. It was a good question, and I think that's the best way for people to access and
okay, great.
We'll send it out later in an email just to make sure everybody else who maybe didn't attend gets it as well.
Yeah, that would be good. For many people, these kinds of thoughts will disturb their minds. You can see why. Okay. But if you are at least a little bit habituated to what we are trying to do here, then it will just expand everything and contract everything at the same time. You kind of might wonder how that can happen. And it's all a question of perception. It's often been said that, you know, when you're dealing with infinity, you're dealing with the most difficult subject. Now, are there further questions, comments, statements that you would like to, you know, put up and if there are answers coming, maybe they'll come, and maybe you just want to say something. So just, you know, either speak it out or put it in the chat box.
I don't know if you want a direct, there was a direct question from Heike. If we try to know it by thinking, is it Maya? I thought that was a good question.
Well, I think Maya is handling Maya is a first step. And learning all about, here's what I would say. First, learn about everything in relativity. And not even necessarily the whole thing, just, you know, what's in your kitchen or your living room or whatever. You learn about it first. And that type of knowledge is very important for making every universe an on-time fulfillment or success. But after you've finished learning all about it with a mind, yes, I mean, because Heike, think of it, the planetary logos as a super mind, the solar logos a mind even greater, the cosmic logos and so forth, a mind even greater. Mind is a fundamental principle of the one who is essentially the universe. So we're never going to dispense with mind. But how far do we try to carry it on our level? Let's just say that mind does its work, and then being makes its presence felt. Now, sometimes you just might get surprised by being, you know what I mean? Or you might have some kind of intuitive hit from the transcendental mind, and it doesn't have a lot to do with being yet, unless you force the issue. But generally, if I'm looking at something, I try to see what it is. I try to get the relativity of it. And then I go into the beingness of it. If that makes sense to you. Okay. What else, Joe? What's there?
Well, I put in the link to the charts that's on Makara, and there was a question about, just to clarify, the new, like Michael's on Michael's screen right now, this was, the colors were done, this was recreated by Tuya.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
Some of the newly colored ones are on Makara. I don't know that all of them are. So if you see, it'll be by TR. Usually there'll be a note which ones have been redone by Tuya.
That's right. You know, the Tibetan starts out with just line drawings, and Keith Bailey did a valuable service by coloring these things. And Tuya, I think, went a bit further There is no red in the egoic lotus, says the Tibetan, except for maybe a general hue for first results. But instead, Tuya substituted the rose color and made sure that certain sequences of petals were oriented properly. So that's where they are. Now, this is all in-universe stuff. And we need it desperately because we have lots of years in Earth years remaining to fulfill the intentions of the Universal Logos, which is our intentions. But that's not the end of the game. Above and beyond any universe is absolute infinity, and things that I'm trying to talk about here as absoluteness, fully realizing, of course, that you can't really do it, but in the exercise of it, you are strengthening certain faculties in your nature, which must be strengthened. So hang in there and proceed. You've been doing it forever anyway. And every universe is a unique game, play, drama, relationship, experience, every universe. Apparently we like doing this. And, you know, it's nowhere near so constricted as many non-philosophical religions, as Blavatsky would call them, have led us to believe. Okay, what else have we got there? Either Joe or Michael, what have we got there? Anything further? Anybody's...
Michael? Yeah.
Yes.
On my computer, your screen is frozen. Oh, there it moves now. Okay. You talk about forever. If there is only now, can there be a forever?
Not really. It's a very high myopic perception of the great breath, which has been going on forever, apparently. There cannot really and ultimately be a forever, but in terms of the phenomena or the perceptions with which we are presented, the sequence of those had no beginning and will have no end, and that we tend to call forever. Ultimately, there is no time, and ultimately, there is no space. Ultimately, there's only that, and thou art that, says the Upanishads. So, a concept like forever is useful when dealing with time as a myopic presentation. But when dealing with time in reality, we discover that time requires division. Just think about that for a minute. You know, before, from, divided from now, now divided from yet to be, this divided from that, this lasts longer than that, this lasts shorter than that. That's all division. Well, there is no division. Boundless, immutable, principle. The minute you step forward with a word like boundless, there's just no division. So it's a very high concept forever and useful in terms of giving the awesome scope of infinity and various kinds of infinities and infinities with beginnings and infinities with no beginnings, infinities with no beginnings but an end. You never reach it. There's these different kinds of infinities. And a word like forever, when you're dealing with the temporal dimension, gives you a sense of, well, what is this? You know, it just expands the scope. But ultimately, philosophically, if you annihilate every interval of space and of time, because points are dimensionless, well, a concept like forever is simply a high Maya. Now look, you know, when you and I are a planetary logos or something other, we'll have a still deeper understanding of what I just tried to say.
And even that is relative.
I believe so, because what comes to me, Michael, is that every thing in universe, including the universe itself, is reduced to what I've been calling an ultimate infinitesimal, which cannot possibly contain the articulation of absolute infinity. And yet, it is absolute infinity. So I've tried to hold off from some of those subjects until a little later, because there's no use killing the listener.
Well, much of this sharing that you've given and others have commented on sort of take me to the bottom of page 284 in Dyna 2, the conditioning thoughts beginning with God is.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And at 280, 285 is where he basically gives us the six trumpeted words. And existence disappears. Naught is, yet God is. Yeah, I show everybody. It's just, hope you don't hear that. Well, it's wonderful. That's all I can say. And it's one of my favorites. It actually, I would have to say, it's my favorite ontological statement. Being cries forth and says, and wouldn't you know it, the Tibetan deems it untranslatable. Existence disappears. Death crumbles all. Okay, good. Existence disappears. Yet all remains immutably the same. For all for A remains untouched, immutably the same. God is. And by that God, of course, we have to know what we mean by God, and that particular God, to me, is absoluteness. So that's a wonderful page to memorize. I've had it memorized many, many times. It slips in and out, you know, but when you really want to know what's going on, that page, which predates, he tells us, the stanzas of Zian, is just a wonderful place to start, because it just gets rid of, well, everything but God, you know? Gets rid of time and unity and space, and then you're right back with the beginning that always has been and always will be. Now, hopefully, that improves the quality. See, I've gone down to quality now, right? The quality of our life, the joy of it, even the bliss of it. Hopefully, these great statements, when absorbed, improve those experiences. Otherwise, what would be the use, you know? So many people are unhappy, and they desire this and they desire that, and what they're really desiring is their own being, if I may say. The seeker and the sought are one, he tells us in these seven wonderful mantric phrases, one of which is, not is, but me, a second ray phrase, or I still persist, a first ray phrase. So you can't go wrong with page 284 and 285 and some of what's preceding it to tell you how he's setting it up. So yeah, you know, in a way, I wanted to say to Heike again, all thinking is Maya. Even the thinking of the absolute deity beyond the universe, that's Maya too. But what isn't Maya is the nothings going on in the no thing, because the no thing doesn't think. It doesn't do anything. What it does is has, let's just say, its beingness is ultimately intense. And that makes up for every other possible motion or act that would be included in that ultimately intense be-ness. That can be a, you know, real tough one. I'm working on it, and anybody who runs into that, you know, will realize that with Blavatsky, when she says, it's beyond the range of all knowledge and all thought, she's correct. And so when with myopic thought we try to approach it, we can only get so far. But we can come closer than we are. As in contemplation, I am the tree. Due to our identicalizing isness, says Diana Bulbachan, and I would just say, our identicalizing isness is recognized. We always are the tree, and everything is everything else, but we don't recognize it. So we have to begin to recognize sameness. and diversity, myopic diversity at the same time. And memory, as you say, Judy, yes. Good opportunity when Mercury is retrograde, just coming down to the ordinary world. Rethink what you thought, and maybe you'll come out with something better. Of course, is there such a thing as infinite memory of all of the myopic states that have ever passed? And is there infinite anticipation of all the myopic states which have yet to be? Well, it seems that the little parts and pieces do have a degree of freedom, you know. What we always have to watch out for is determinism. I think we live in an indeterminate universe and many universes, and it's not like you're a robot and God is pressing the buttons. Some theologians have thought that. I just think there is this limitation we call free choice. In a way, the absolute can only show up as less than itself. The absolute deity can only show up again as less than itself. And those little extensions of absolute infinity at a certain point seem to have uncompelled will. If everything was compelled from the very highest source, you would simply be a robot. You would be programmed, and you would do only what you were programmed to do. I do not think that is the reality. Okay. Well, look, I'm, like I say, happy to see you here. And, you know, sometimes in my sort of build-up condition here, as I try to get ready for a very long plane flight and, you know, a lot of stress and all that, I may have to miss this one or that one. Tomorrow morning, I think we have our triangles. Two of you will that broadcast at our usual YouTube. I think it ends with the word live or something like that. Anyway, Joe, where can they always?
Oh, the broadcast link is on makara.us. You can always go there. And all the broadcasts use the same link. And then are you planning on doing the Science of Triangles tomorrow evening then at 6
so far,
p.m.? Okay.
Wait.
It would be the broadcast in the a.m. and the webinar in the p.m.
Let's see how it goes, huh?
Okay.
So far, let's just say I'm planning.
All right. So okay. Stay tuned, so everyone. The broadcast link is on makara.us.
And isn't it interesting that we're dealing with a subject that makes the science of triangles look concrete? But so it is. And there's lots of parts of our faculties that have to be developed a lot farther than they are now. So just realize that is the case. The masters have done it. And still, they look at their accomplishments as tiny compared to what a ray life may have done, or a planetary logos or a solar logos and so forth. So, but they're in the relative world, and they're right. Their accomplishments are tiny, but relative to us, vast. And I just got to say that all accomplishments in universe are tiny compared to the state of supra universal absolute infinitude. I know big words, but well, you know, the concepts behind them are not that bad. Above, below, big, small, you know, we can make all that work for us. So friends, gosh, I actually seem to be holding pretty close to my promise. Let's do the great invocation together, realizing that in the world of Maya, yet another universe, yet another Mahamaya, we have a lot to accomplish in a more concrete way in order to fulfill the divine plan, which is our plan, the divine purpose, which is our purpose. So the great invocation is that great word of power, that great mantra of light and power, not really leaving out love either, which will take us the next step. And who knows how many planets it has already been used. Who knows? So together then, and you know, just put yourself on self-mute, whatever. And we'll say this together. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wheels of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. You just, you know, go on with your own, because I have to cut mine short at the moment, and you can continue. I'll try to give you the space to do that. Okay, friends, then, for those who will get this ready and up on Makara, and for those of you who want to attend our weekly triangles work, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. GMT. Remember how DK said of the triangles, this is a work which must go on. Quite a statement. So the whole team wishes you lots of love and many blessings, and we'll be in touch with you. Bye-bye.